What do you do when someone you love passes away? Or what to do when a friend or family member has lost someone they love and care about? Grief is a feeling that I don't think we talk about very often. Sometimes we try to just get rid of it or skip over it. Yet it is a universal feeling. It's something we will all experience. Welcome to This Complex Life. I am Mariva Karkas, and today I want to talk about grief. Now, there are so many different types of grief, and it can be a little bit confusing. We have normal grief, so the grief that we experience when someone passes away, or the normal sort of distress that accompanies that. We have complicated grief, which is when grief worsens over time. There's traumatic grief. It's the grief that we feel after a sudden or traumatic loss of a loved one. Chronic grief, a grief that just doesn't subside. Anticipatory grief, the grief you feel when you're waiting for someone to pass away. And I'm going to talk a lot about that as well in today's episode, anticipatory grief. That's a big one that I'm hearing people talk about a lot lately. And it's something that I experienced fairly recently. Well, I had a grandparent in a nursing home with dementia. And so I really want to touch on anticipatory grief. There's disenfranchised grief. It's a grief that sometimes sits outside normal relationships that might be difficult to talk about, maybe not be acceptable or openly acknowledged or socially supported. So this could be related to the characteristics of the bereaved person or something else that might not be seen as okay to talk about. And then we have so many more. We've got disenfranchised grief, exaggerated grief, masked grief, inhibited grief, collective grief, where an entire community or group is exposed to the same trauma. It could be a natural disaster, a traumatic event, and there's a whole community that goes through that grief together. Cumulative grief, so things that kind of one builds up on the other. Prolonged grief, when normal grief lasts for 12 months or longer. Delayed grief and absent grief. And so there's so many ways that we can look at grief. And I know in my experience that we don't talk about it very well. So my first exposure to grief was, like probably most kids, through pets or animals. And I used to collect bugs and insects as a kid, and I remember one of them passed away and I put them in a little matchbox and buried them in the yard, and using icy pole sticks made like a little rest in peace kind of thing. And then there was an event at my primary school where we had a quite traumatic incident, and we came to school one day and there were news reporters and police and a whole bunch of commotion, and two students from the school had been brutally murdered. And then their father, who murdered them, jumped in front of a truck and took his own life. And so that was a huge sort of collective trauma. And while I didn't know them very well, they were in different classes to me, that left an impact on the school, and it left an impact on teachers. And we had a memorial, and I remember the children's parent, remaining parent, being there. Like, it was quite intense. And so my first experiences of grief were the observations of others. Then we had family members who passed away who maybe weren't super close. And then it got to grandparents. So I had a little bit more life experience before I navigated some of those, but it still absolutely floored me. Losing people that you love, it just sends through a whole whirlwind of emotions. And I've been wanting to do this episode for a little while, but as you can imagine, it can be hard to talk about. And some of the times I've gone to press record, it's just like, no, I'm not in the mood. And so let's see how this goes. But I do want to talk about grief. And there's another particular, not a specific type of grief, but something like when someone takes their own life and we have a death by suicide, that can lead to a lot of complicated feelings. It could be, in some cultures, if that is seen as not an okay thing, it could be that disenfranchised grief where someone is grieving the loss of somebody, but there might be all this shame and stigma around it. And I did an episode on my other podcast about my experiences as a therapist when I've lost a client to suicide, and I'll pop links to that with the show, and you can check that out if that's of interest to you. But they're really big feelings. And when we add in the different ways people die, if it's out of order of, you know, life, you know, it's maybe expected that I lose a grandparent, not so expected for a parent to lose a child. So there's different things that can never make it easier, but some things are sort of expected, and how we talk about that really matters. And so in the flavor of this complex life, I really want to talk about what you can do when you're the one grieving, and what you can do and what not to do if you're the one supporting. And so grief is part of life, and it comes with hand in hand with love. The more you have loved someone, I think the greater the grief, and they are unavoidable. Where I see difficulty is what you do after. And I know we talk about feeling guilty or not wanting to move on, or anticipating something bad happening again. And I think that that can be really hard and really holds people back. And we can kind of, we've got foreboding joy. So something lovely might happen, and then straight away we think about when that might get taken away. And when you have experienced loss, you know what it feels like to lose. You know what it feels like to grieve. And so the fear of it happening again is really powerful and really huge. And I don't want to discourage people from acknowledging that, because we sometimes try to just wrap things up quickly, be like, okay, the grieving's done, let's move on. And no. And yet it can also be hard to move on or to do things and sit with the grief. And all of that can happen at once. And we probably really suck at nuance, at recognizing two things can happen at once. And one of the conversations that happens quite a lot in my therapy room, on my therapy couch, is people talk about an exciting event, a future event, and then they get struck with grief. They get this little pang of grief. And it reminds me of a story I heard of somebody being excited about a new partner and thinking about what their future might look like, and we might move in together and get married, and then poof, a wave of grief because they had lost a parent. And so we talked about all of these future experiences, these milestones, will forever be both happy and sad. You will be happy in that moment, and you'll have a moment of sadness that that person that you love isn't there to share that with you. And to make room for that, to allow for that, and to honor that. So in events where you know that is the kind of thing I would have loved that parent to be there for, give them a way to be there. Give them a space, a time, a way that you communicate or talk to them, whether it's through words, whether you go to a, you know, if they're buried somewhere, or you have a way of communicating that, acknowledging that you wish they were there, and not judging yourself for that, not being cruel to yourself. I should have been over this. It's been 10 years, 20 years, whatever. Just knowing that I wish they were here. And once you can feel the feeling, you can move through it. But knowing that it'll come, they'll come together. Those emotions, the good and the grief, will come at the same time, can actually help normalize that experience for people. And I know that at particular times of the year, think, you know, Christmases or birthdays, you might feel grief even more because that's an event or a time where you might have gathered with those important people and they're no longer here. And I know for me, the first Christmas I had without my grandparents when they passed away, I couldn't cope. It didn't feel real. It didn't feel like Christmas. There were certain little traditions that just, things that just didn't happen, little rituals. It felt really foreign, and they have never felt the same since. And that is still something that's ongoing and that's changed. And there are new people, new family members, new babies that have come along, new partners that have been introduced. And it's sometimes really quite confronting to think there are these amazing new people in my life who will never have known these amazing people who contributed to the person I am. And that just that sits there. I can't fix it. I can't change it. And there's nothing anybody can say that takes that away. It just is. And one of the problematic things I see people do is try to be too positive and silver lining it. And, oh, at least you had them as long as you did. Or at least blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't want to hear that. Do not start a conversation that is supposed to be supportive or show empathy with, at least. It is terrible. I'd rather you say, I don't know what to say right now, than say something that starts with at least. And especially any comments like, oh, they are with God now, or God needed another angel. It's like, that's the last thing you want to hear. It's like, there's no greater meaning to this. Like, there's no, you know, here's God collecting angels. Like, no, that stuff is so dismissive. So do not be overly positive. It doesn't help the person. What it actually does is make it hard for them to talk to you. They don't feel happier or better. Oh yeah, you're right. There is a silver lining to this. They just learn you can't cope with this. And what people grieving need is someone to witness their pain, to hold space for it. Let them be sad or angry and don't try to change it. Don't try to take it away. Don't try to judge it. People wait sometimes way too long to get support for mental health. And I think grief is one of those ones as well. I've heard different data sets around how many years it takes for somebody to seek support for grief, but I'm not sure which ones are particularly relevant. But you would know someone, right? You can all listening will probably think, oh, there's someone I know who probably needed to get help a little bit earlier. And maybe they've waited 2 years, 5 years, 10, 20, and they're still in the thick of their grief and they're languishing and it's impacting them on a day-to-day level. And that could be really beneficial for them to have some support. And this is where conversations with loved ones and people who care is really important. Like, I talk about this a lot in some of the training that I run. When I run something like mental health first aid, we're looking at when someone's mental health is declining or there's a flare up or a crisis and how to respond. And so being able to notice if someone is not getting back to their day-to-day functioning, they're not able to enjoy what they used to enjoy. We don't want to diagnose that as depression. It would make sense if someone's grieving that it takes them some time to bounce back. But we need to also know, when do we encourage them to seek some support? When do we encourage them to reach out? Or if you're listening and you haven't reached out, having you think about why, what gets in the way. And one of the things that I see get in the way for people is guilt. And they think the pain is what keeps that loved one alive and that grief keeps them alive. And I get the logic of that. If you let go of the grief, then it's like letting go of them. But love is what keeps them alive. Their memory lives inside of you. And so being able to let some of that grief, like the grip that you have on that, loosen and allow yourself to remember the love, that's what keeps them alive. And so sitting with letting go of that grief enough to want to get some support or how to move through it is so important. You can't force somebody. It's when they're ready, and no one's going to feel supported if you say it's about time that you did this or you should get rid of this. They just feel unsupported and judged, and it's unlikely to have an impact or a positive impact. There are some differences in how we grieve. And so I want to talk a little bit about that as well. How we grieve is very different. There are some practical grievers. They will attend the funeral or the service. They show up, they do the thing, they shed a tear, they leave a flower, they might write into a guest book or a card. And for them, the grief is done. And then there's everybody else. And that can cause a lot of difficulty in relationships. And I've seen it in my personal life where someone is a practical griever, and I feel like they're not grieving enough, and I feel that my feelings are too big for them, and that creates distance. In the couples that I work with, this can create so much conflict, and understanding that someone's grieving style is different from yours can really change how you show up for each other. If one person is that practical griever, they might genuinely find the other person's emotions too big, and it's important that you sit with that. If it's your partner and they are going through something huge, finding a way to tolerate the discomfort of sitting with big feelings so that they feel loved and supported is really important. And if the person who talks about feelings, wants to process it, finding a safe person to do that with, but maybe not expecting your partner to do the same back if that's not how they grieve. So trying to develop an understanding about how each of you likes to grieve so that there's no judgment. Because where I see this go wrong, if one person's a practical griever, the other person might think they didn't love them enough. They didn't care enough. And this happens a lot with a miscarriage or a stillborn, where one partner might be like, cool, super practical, we can just try again, we can do this. And the other parent is completely in grief and they are needing a lot of support and they're needing a lot of emotional, I guess, comfort to process that, to get through that. And they see the other person's practicality as actually a hindrance to their own recovery, to their own support, because it looks like to them, not saying this is the case, and I've worked with many couples around this issue, where they see that as, well, you didn't really want this, or it didn't matter as much to you, or you didn't care as much. And when I speak to the other partner, often what I hear is they've grieved in their own way, or they didn't want to add extra stress to their partner, because if they truly showed how they felt and let those feelings take over, then they're scared that there'll be nobody to hold them up. If they both fell apart, then who would be left standing? And so some of them are sacrificing their grief journey. They're squishing it all down to try and be supportive or stoic, and it creates distance. And so having conversations around this, it's really, really, really important. We have one of the things that I noticed for myself when I was in the thick of grief is, I didn't have a word for it at the time, but now I know it's called grief bursts. And it was when something would remind you of that person or thing. And so a car might drive past that had the same, it was the same car as my grandpa drove, and I would burst into tears. Or now I might be at the dog park and I see a dog who looks very similar to my dog, and I'll burst into tears. Or I hear someone else's dog with the same name and they're yelling it out, and it's just a flood of feelings. And so it can happen just randomly, and it can happen spontaneously. Sometimes I might not even be able to recognize the cue, but there was probably one there. And so we have these grief bursts, and they can happen weeks, months, or years later, and that's totally normal. Our feelings show us what's important. They signal to us what we value. And having a moment of grief and sadness doesn't mean you have to call in sick or take the day off. Or if it's a student at a school and they have a moment of tears, they don't need a referral to a therapist. We don't need to really activate a whole bunch of support necessarily. It's simply just acknowledging, I felt a feeling, and that feeling was grief, and that's okay, that makes sense. One of the areas that really interests me when we talk about grief is how we show up for people. And the last thing that someone needs when they're grieving, especially in those immediate few days and they're in like a grief brain fog, is to make more decisions. So I know it's really kind when someone says, just tell me what you need, but you can't think of it. I know I definitely can't. And so showing up with what you can do, or just saying, I'm going to drop a lasagna off, I'm going to bring this around. And if you're not sure on timelines, there's like a level of intense support in those first few days, and then maybe in a few weeks, and then in a few months. And so spacing that out, and depending on what the situation is for that person, they might need different supports. And if it's a spouse that's died, you know, I heard an analogy that losing a spouse is like losing one of the bits of a pair of scissors. So you're like, you're the one scissor, and it's completely, everything feels foreign, everything you do. Like, how do you go from a we back to an I? And if that person, if they divided up household chores in a particular way, they might need practical support. They might need someone to come and help cook or mow the lawn or walk the dog or look after the children. And so show up. You know what those people need. You know that they need to eat. You know that they need groceries. You might know that they need their car serviced or their dog walked or their child taken to soccer. So don't ask, well, what do you need, or tell me how I can help. Step in, show up, put some food in their freezer. Do what you think you can and offer that, and give and be, show up. Send the card, send the flowers, stand at the back of the service if it's a funeral. We feel connected with people. When we feel connected and supported, it does help us heal. And afterwards, when that brain fog has gone, you remember who showed up for those moments. You remember who sent you the text or the card or was at the back of the service comforting you or just showing their support. Those things really matter. So show up, bring the stuff. And if you're not sure, maybe offer saying, I can bring you food or walk your dog. I'm going to the market on Sunday and I'm going to get you some groceries. Would you like some fruit or do you want just a couple of pre-packaged, pre-made lasagnas? Option one or two in a text message, or I'm bringing you both. You know, it make the decision super, super, super easy, or take the decision-making away altogether and give them a generous, positive assumption. Some people grieve with sadness and some grieve with anger. I know I oscillate between the two, and we don't cope well with anger. People get scared of anger. They think it's aggressive or they get reactive. And that is really a shame when someone is grieving and they might be feeling more angry, irritable feelings, that instead of seeing that as pain, we punish it. We restrict it. We tell them off for it. Or we say, don't speak to me like that. And we get bigger and intense. And we miss that. And so sometimes what people need when they're at their most prickly is that softness, is a hug, and is the benefit of the doubt, is a generous, positive assumption. Give them some grace, give them some wiggle room that they might be irritable, they might be cranky, they might be forgetful, they're probably not sleeping, and they might be feeling shame about something, guilt at what they could have done different. And that process can take days, weeks, months to resolve or to be worked through, and they need you most. And sometimes we have an instinct to punish people when their feelings feel too big and like that's somehow going to fix it. And so we need to check in on our own capacity, monitor that, manage that if we really want to be effective for supporting somebody who's grieving, and checking in, asking them, you know, in the days or weeks or months later, being like, I know it's been a few weeks. I want to check in about how that funeral was, or tell me about that person, or what's your favorite story about them, and sharing those memories, keeping that alive for that person is really helpful. I mentioned earlier, I want to talk about anticipatory grief, and it's probably enough content for another episode. So maybe I'll do a part two. Let me know what you want, if you want me to do a second episode. But anticipatory grief is something that I know I experienced quite recently, having a grandparent in a nursing home with dementia. And she recently passed away as my last grandparent. And it was a real shock because in one way, the grandparent that I knew and loved and made food with and, you know, had all these memories with was physically there, but none of that other stuff was there. And so her physical, like her passing away, still was really hurtful, but it was also really confusing because for the last few years, she was slowly slipping away. So at one point, she was alive, but no longer coming to family functions because she needed around-the-clock care. There was a point in which you'd go visit her. She no longer remembered your name, but she recognized you as someone familiar. And then another visit, it would be that you were a complete stranger. And then another visit, words wouldn't come out. She made no logical sense in conversation. And so there was this grief about losing these connection points along the way, knowing what was inevitably going to happen. And then also knowing that she's here now and how do we make the most of that? But knowing that the time is coming, and that got even sharper and more painful in the week leading up to her death. So being in sort of end of life care and being told that we're just making her comfortable and having no idea if she knew we were there, if she could hear us, if, you know, was asleep or unconscious or what was happening. And so that kind of grief is deep and it's profound and it requires consideration and support. And if someone is going through that anticipatory grief, I mean, that stage could last You know, for a long time, for some people, I've seen them slowly lose a spouse or a grandparent or a parent over a decade. And they might need some emotional support as well as practical. They might need someone to take them out for lunch, to give them a break from care responsibilities, to be shown that little bit of extra kindness. And that could be for quite a long time and also really important to show up for. And so I'm going to leave you with that to think about how you show up or what support you can provide and how you might help yourself. I mean, there's a lot in that depending on what's happening, but we don't do this alone. We can't go through this alone. And the final bit I really want to talk about is comparison and what people will say, well, which grief is worse? I lost my son, but I lost my parents, but I lost my partner, but I was with my partner for 2 years. I was with mine for 40 years. I mean, the grief that is the most important is yours, that your grief is what hurts you. And it doesn't hurt you any less because someone else is also grieving. And it doesn't take away from their grief that you're grieving. And so people can really struggle with this. And sometimes what I think they're trying to say without saying it is my grief hasn't been explored enough. It hasn't been held enough. It hasn't been witnessed enough. And so if someone is saying, oh, well, I don't know what you've got to complain about. I lost my whatever. That's probably them in a really unhelpful, unhealthy way saying, I need more support. I need someone to really listen to me. I don't feel like I've healed properly. And that's really tricky. And so no grief is better or worse than the other. Your grief is important. Your grief matters. And you don't have to walk through it alone. You can get support through friends, through family, through counseling, or a grief group. And there are books and there are resources. But I think being with other people and feeling seen and heard is so helpful. And I like to use this, saying with family, with parents, with kids, is hug, heard, help. So actually maybe asking the person, do you need a hug? Do you need something practical like help? Or do you just want to vent? And offering that and maybe being really clear, saying, I can take you to a smash room if you want to break stuff and get your anger out. We can go for a long walk in silence. I'll pick you up. I'll take you to the beach and you don't have to talk to me. Or I can come over and we can binge watch Lord of the Rings. I know that's one of my favorites. And we don't have to talk. Which one of those sounds good? You know, so you can offer the different options of what that person might need. So thank you for listening. And if you're in grief or you have someone that you love who's grieving, I hope that this provided a few ideas of what you could do and things to try. And for more personalized support, reach out to a therapist in your area. And if you've got a question that you'd like me to answer on the podcast or a topic you'd like to explore, there'll be a link to that in the notes. And I hope to hear from you.